The following is provided through the IAAIS Program Share Service.
Hello and welcome to this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman with the Virginia Voice. We continue with our article from last week from archaeology.org. Letter from Iraq, March 1st, 2011. The Ziggurat Endures. An American soldier reflects on his experience at the ancient city of Ur, by Michael Taylor. The Ba'ath Party, which dominated Iraq from 1968 to 2003, was keenly interested in Iraq's Mesopotamian heritage and its potential to unite a population fragmented by sectarian differences. As part of an aggressive program in the 1970s to restore Mesopotamian antiquities, the Ba'athists installed a new facade on the ziggurat stairways and around the top of the first tier, in addition to making other repairs. A grand festival in 1977 celebrated the restoration. Hailing the legacy of Ur-Nammu, who, according to the official Ba'ath newspaper, united the state administratively and politically after it had been divided and split. Ur, treated modestly by Hussein, was fortunate not to have captured the dictator's self-aggrandizing imagination the way Babylon had. Hussein liked to compare himself to that city's Hammurabi and Nebuchadnezzar II, and ordered an elaborate reconstruction of the Babylonian ruins, transforming them into a gaudy Ba'athus theme park. He even had his name stamped in cuneiform on the new bricks. Ur, on the other hand, received only basic restoration, with modern bricks protecting ancient ones within, thankfully devoid of megalomaniac excess. As a general rule, most of the bricks in the massive first tier of the ziggurat are the originals of Ur-Nammu, while rubble on the second tier dates to Nabonidus. Facade elements, such as the banisters on the stairways, fencing around the edge of the first tier, and the facing on the second tier, are modern restoration. The Ur III Empire, founded by Ur-Nammu, was overrun around 1950 BC by Elamites invading from the east, a disaster memorialized in haunting Sumerian laments. Ur, inside there is death, outside there is death. Inside we succumb to famine, outside we are dispatched by Elamite blades. The city, however, endured and was eventually subordinated under successive empires of Babylonians, Kassites, Assyrians, Neo-Babylonians, Persians, and briefly, Macedonians. At some point after the Persian invasion in 539 BC, the Euphrates shifted to the north and east of the city, transforming Ur from prime riverfront property to the center of an expanding desert. While a tablet found at Ur that mentions Philip Arrhidaeus, Alexander the Great's half-brother, states that the site was inhabited as late as 316 BC. It was more or less abandoned for the next 2,200 years. As I walked around the site in 2008, I could see evidence of archaeological activity, great tells of dirt and ceramic sherds. In 1854, James E. Taylor, the British consul at Basra, conducted an excavation at Tel Amuqayr, the Mound of Pitch, so named by the locals for the bitumen mortar visible in it. He revealed the crumbling ruins of the ziggurat, as well as cuneiform tablets that identified the site as the biblical Ur of the Chaldees, birthplace of Abraham in Genesis. There were a few minor British digs in the waning years of World War I, but the landmark excavation of the site was conducted between 1922 and 1934 through a joint expedition sponsored by the British Museum and the University of Pennsylvania. The chief archaeologist was Leonard Woolley, an experienced Near East excavator who had previously dug in Syria with T.E. Lawrence. The dig captured the public imagination and proved curiously conducive to romance. Woolley married his assistant, Catherine Merck, in 1927. When a charming divorcee named Agatha Christie visited the site, she caught the eye of another archaeologist, Max E. L. Mallowan, 14 years her junior, and the couple married in 1930. Catherine Woolley quickly came to detest Christie, who was subsequently banished from the dig. Mallowan lamented that there was only room for one woman at Ur, and spent the first dig season after his marriage separated from his bride. The dig at Ur inspired Christie's 1936 mystery novel, Murder in Mesopotamia, in which the archaeologist's sickly wife, Mrs. Leidner, is brutally murdered. Similarities between the victim and Catherine Woolley were not exactly accidental. Woolley's most dramatic finds were in the necropolis, where he uncovered the remains of around 1,850 people from all stages of the city's life. He defined 16 tombs as royal and identified a grisly burial practice. Human sacrificial victims were arranged around the royal dead, producing what he dubbed death pits. The largest of these, the Great Death Pit, contained the bodies of 68 women and 6 men. Woolley especially excelled in the excavation of delicate objects. He extracted fragile artifacts, such as the 2 Ram in a Thicket statues, by coating them in melted wax before removing them. Noticing 2 voids in the earth left by decaying organic matter, he carefully filled them with plaster, producing a precise cast of a lyre. Woolley continued excavating until diminishing finds and funds forced an end to the expedition. There has not been an excavation at Ur since. Though only soldiers see Ur today, the ruins have largely escaped the worst effects of modern warfare. The site was incorporated into a Hussein-era military base, which was strafed by Allied warplanes during the First Gulf War, causing minor collateral damage. The city was in turn occupied by U.S. forces in 2003, which prevented the orgy of destructive looting that took place at other ancient Iraqi sites. While we were subject to mortar and Katyusha rocket attacks at the base, there does not appear to have been any significant damage to Ur itself. In 2009, U.S. military authorities turned the site of Ur over to the Iraq State Board of Antiquities and Heritage. The future of Iraq remains precarious, as sectarian violence between Sunnis and Shiites continues to rack the country, and the Iraqi army begins to take over security duties. But Mesopotamian sites such as Ur represent a glimmer of hope. If there is a dramatic reduction in violence, international tourism revenues from Mesopotamian archaeology could be substantial. Thriving archaeological activity might also help regenerate a once vibrant Iraqi intelligentsia depleted by violence and emigration. More importantly, ancient Mesopotamia retains the potential to serve as a rallying point and common heritage for a responsible Iraqi nationalism that transcends sectarian divides. Our visit to Ur was short. Soon it would be time for another mission. We put away our cameras, suited up in our body armor, and loaded magazines into our rifles. The only way for a Westerner to visit Ur in 2008 was to come ready for war, in armored vehicles bristling with machine guns. Hopefully, someday soon, people from across the world will peacefully tour what we saw as soldiers. Michael Taylor served as a platoon leader in Iraq from 2000 to 2008. He is currently a graduate student in history at the University of California, Berkeley. That was The Ziggurat Endures by Michael Taylor. March 1st, 2011. Our next article is from AtlasObscura.com. Hidden and Unusual Things to Do in Iraq, November 21, 2024. Babylon. Celebrated as a center of civilization, the remains of the ancient city have been nearly destroyed by greed, egoism, and war. After colonial looting, the narcissistic dreams of a dictator, and the heavy mark of war, the legendary city of Babylon has almost vanished. The ancient city was the capital of the Mesopotamian dynasties. Its final glory was as capital of the kingdom of Babylonia under King Nebuchadnezzar II, who ruled from 605 to 563 BCE. During his reign, most of the buildings represented by the surviving ruins were constructed, including two grand palaces. The Hanging Gardens of Babylon, built by Nebuchadnezzar for his wife Amytis, are remembered as one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. He also expanded his territory by forcing thousands to relocate, starting the first exile in Jewish history. Babylon's remains, mounds of mud brick buildings spread over about 30 square kilometers, are in present-day Iraq, south of Baghdad. Starting in 1983, Saddam Hussein, imagining himself as heir to Nebuchadnezzar, ordered the rebuilding of Babylon. Like Nebuchadnezzar, Hussein had his name inscribed on the bricks, which were placed directly on top of the ruins, some 2,500 years old. A sample inscription translates to, "In the reign of the victorious Saddam Hussein, the President of the Republic, may God keep him, the guardian of the great Iraq, and the renovator of its renaissance, and the builder of its great civilization. The rebuilding of the great city of Babylon was done in 1987. Hussein also added huge portraits of himself and Nebuchadnezzar at the entrance of the ruins. As most Iraqi men were fighting the bloody Iran-Iraq war, he brought in thousands of Sudanese workers to lay new yellow bricks over the old mud construction where Nebuchadnezzar's palace had stood. No one is sure what the palace looked like, but that didn't stop Hussein's garish and quick reincarnation of the old splendor. At the end of the Persian Gulf War, he commissioned a palace over more Babylonian ruins, in the same pyramid style as a Sumerian ziggurat, calling it Saddam Hill. The massive, gaudy structure almost completely covered the original ruins, outraging archaeologists. Hussein's plans for a cable line running over the Babylon site were halted with the 2003 invasion. Before Hussein's reconstruction, there had already been destruction from the shifts in rivers and deserts, and still more from colonial powers. Germans took the Ishtar Gate, which is now in the Pergamon Museum in Berlin, while the French took ceramics, and the Turks used Babylonian bricks to build dams on the Euphrates. The occupation of U.S. forces also damaged the site. Following the 2003 invasion, the U.S. Camp Alpha was set up on the ruins. Areas were leveled to create landing pads for helicopters and parking lots for vehicles. Tanks rumbled over the ancient bricks, and Polish troops dug trenches through a temple. Soil holding artifacts and bones were scooped into sandbags, and even the military presence couldn't keep out looters, who ransacked Iraq's more than 10,000 historic sites after the invasion. But there is hope. With the end of his rule, Hussein's ego-driven reconstruction of Babylon was stopped. In 2006, UN officials and Iraqi leaders stated their intentions to restore Babylon into a cultural center. It's estimated that 95% of Babylon could be hidden in the unexcavated mounds at the site. In 2009, the ruins and Hussein's palace were opened to tourists. While there is much enthusiasm for archaeological research and restoration of the site, the colossal disfigurement may take decades to reverse. Bidinian Gate. This beautiful arched gate is all that remains of the fortress the ancient mountaintop town of Amidia once was. Amidia, in Iraqi Kurdistan, is one of those cities whose history is so long it approaches the unbelievable. It is estimated that there was a stable settlement at this site thousands of years ago, part of an Assyrian empire. It is also said to be the birthplace of the three wise men, the biblical magi that made a pilgrimage to Bethlehem to bring presents to Jesus Christ upon his birth. Several centuries and empires later, Amidia was conquered by the Arabs, and in the 7th century, a pasha began to be the ruler of Amidia. It wasn't until centuries later, during the Bidinian Emirate, 1376 to 1843, that Amidia became known as a place where Muslims, Christians, and Jews could live side by side in peace. It was also during this time that the Bidinian Gate was built. Perched on the western slopes of Amidia, the arched stone gate was once the only entryway into the fortified town. A large winding stone staircase goes under the 13-foot-wide gate, which bears four carvings of people whose identity is unclear. Some historians think they could be Parthian kings from the 3rd century, suggesting this entrance had been in use for several centuries before the gate was built. The arch is adorned with an effigy of the sun, a recurring symbol in Kurdish architecture, enclosed by a cord with four knots, representing the geopolitical significance of the ancient city. The Tree of Knowledge, a shrine on the shores of the Tigris. In the small southern Iraqi city of Gurna, an unusual shrine stands on the shore of the Tigris. A small dead tree, protected by low brick walls and surrounded by a concrete plaza. This tree is, according to local legend, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the one that Eve ate from in the Garden of Eden. Gurna has been noted in travelers' accounts for centuries as the place where the great Tigris and Euphrates rivers meet and join together for a few miles before emptying into the Persian Gulf. The Tigris and Euphrates are two of the four rivers of paradise that flowed out of the Garden of Eden, as named in Genesis 2:10-14. Elements from the early stories of Genesis have been traced to the cuneiform tablets written by the Sumerians and Babylonians, who lived in this part of the world. It is clearly a deciduous tree, not a palm, but no one can say for sure which species it once was or how long it has been there. British soldiers reportedly climbed and broke the tree in post-World War I occupation. It was repaired with concrete. In the 1950s, a small park of local plants was built around the tree as a gesture of goodwill after World War II. Under the early reign of Saddam Hussein, the shrine was preserved in a small concrete plaza, which has reportedly deteriorated in the wake of the 2003 American invasion. By then, there were actually several trees of knowledge. Although the shrine is associated with the Garden of the Eden story, which is shared among Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, it also retains aspects of much older pre-monotheistic traditions of tree worship in the Middle East. When one sacred tree dies, you must plant another to preserve the sacredness. So often several trees are standing in different stages of decay. People travel from other parts of the country to pray at the tree, sometimes tying small green pieces of cloth around its branches as a token. Muddath houses, giant reed houses made in the marshes of southern Iraq. Pictures of Iraq that you see in the news might show a vast desert, scorching temperatures, or images of warfare. The rest of the country is often lost in the scramble and written off, which keeps the rest of the world from a 5,000-year-old culture that includes the majestic Muddath houses of the Marsh Arabs of southern Iraq. With a population just under 500,000, it is understandable that the Madan people, also called Marsh Arabs, often get lost in the fracas. However, a glance into their world reveals a type of architecture that is unique and awe-inspiring. Muddath houses are slightly curved communal spaces constructed out of reeds and adobe. They are typically maintained by the village sheikh through a taxation system. Muddath houses act as the main center of society for the Madan. Visitors are hosted in the house, and religious and cultural life are also centered there. Today, a rebirth of the ancient Muddath style has been spurred by the United States Army, who have worked with local populations to rebuild modern houses with a Madan twist. In an effort to aid refugees, many of these marsh homes have been constructed as housing projects to accommodate the deluge of people returning to southern Iraq after being displaced by the war. Baghdad Battery in the National Museum of Iraq. A 2,200-year-old vessel may have been able to keep a charge. In 1938, a number of small jars were found in the collection of the National Museum of Iraq. These jars, previously overlooked, were found to be quite unique. Each contained copper and iron and was sealed with asphalt. It was hypothesized, based on the various components, that they were a type of battery, possibly used to electroplate metals. Since they were noticed long after they had been taken from outside of the archaeological context, not much else is known about them. MythBusters, the television show, recreated them and found that they were able to hold a charge and electroplate quite effectively. However, just because something could have been done doesn't mean it was done. The jars also very closely resembled jars designed to hold sacred scrolls. We may never know their true nature, but no doubt people will continue to speculate on the purpose of the Baghdad Battery for a long time to come. Some of the original 12 Baghdad batteries can be seen at the National Museum of Iraq, which is currently closed due to the 2003 looting, which saw nearly half of its collection stolen. Khanzad Castle, the legendary fortress of a female Kurdish warrior leader. Also known as Banaman Citadel, located on a hilltop towering over the Hirir Plains, the castle was built by order of Mir Khanzad and is where she ruled over the two districts of Hirir and Saran, now the governorate of Erbil. Khanzad was the sister of Mir Suleiman, ruler of the Saran Emirate under the Ottoman Empire in the late 16th or early 17th century, until he was poisoned by the hand of Lashkri, one of his military commanders. After the deed, the murderous Lashkri fled to the Shengal Mountains. Meanwhile, Khanzad assumed control of the emirate after her brother's death. From his hideout in Sinjar, Lashkri was reached by a letter signed by Khanzad, which contained a marriage proposal. When Lashkri then met her in Hirir, the Kurdish ruler sentenced him to death with all his men. During her reign, Khanzad commanded an army of up to 50,000 soldiers and built roads, schools, mosques, and fortresses. With time, Khanzad acquired the feature of a legendary warrior princess, represented in songs and poems, as well as paintings and statues. Khanzad's name is nowadays a very popular name for Kurdish girls and women. Her fortress and residence, a two-story citadel with four round towers at each corner, built in stones and gypsum, is still standing today on top of its small hill, on the road between the modern cities of Erbil and Shakhlawa. It is a quiet reminder that these lands were once ruled by a brave, strong, and clever female ruler. Save Iraqi Culture. A surreal monument depicting a five-armed giant supporting a toppling cylinder seal. In 2010, a bizarre sculpture was unveiled in the Mansour district of Baghdad, Iraq. Designed by renowned sculptor Mohammed Ghani Hikmat, it depicts a muscular giant supporting a Sumerian-style cylinder seal, which is broken at the base and toppling, using all his five arms. When deciphered, the cuneiform on the cylinder seal reads, "Writing began here," in reference to the Mesopotamian civilization's role in the development of writing systems. Commissioned by the mayor of Baghdad, it was part of the city's attempt to improve its long-tarnished image to promote the richness of Iraqi culture and history. That was Hidden and Unusual Things to Do in Iraq. That's all for this week's World Traveler. I'm Leah Blackman for the Virginia Voice. This program is also available on demand at www.virginiavoice.org.